guys, and welcome to episode 204 of the OCDstories.com podcast. And this episode, I interview Karina Dash. Karina is a licensed therapist based in Colorado, and she's been on the show before, and I got her on this time to talk about postpartum OCD. And in this episode, she talks about what is postpartum OCD, some of the obsessions and compulsions around this theme, the treatment for postpartum OCD, and how loved ones and family can support those people with OCD dealing with this particular theme. And she covers much, much more. So I hope you find this episode useful. And without further ado, here is Karina. Welcome back to the show, Karina.
Thank you very much for having me again.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. And today we're going to be talking about postpartum OCD. So initially, what is postpartum OCD?
Sure. So I guess I'll just give a little bit of a background.
Yeah.
You know, most women know about baby blues. They hear about it so much that they might expect to feel a little bit down after they give birth. So there's a lot of awareness around this idea of feeling sad after you give birth. And there's less stigma, I think, because there's a lot of education and there's a lot of talk about it. And so it becomes understood that it's common to feel stressed out and sad and lonely and tired after having a baby because it's a very difficult thing to do. But for some women, the baby blues can develop into something that's a little more severe and be seen as clinical depression. We know that as postpartum depression. It's common. It's like 1 in 7 women experience postpartum depression. Unlike the baby blues, which kind of goes away on its own, postpartum depression needs to be treated. So it's recommended that women seek professional help. So postpartum depression it includes symptoms involving sadness and hopelessness, but most importantly, an extreme disinterest in bonding or caring for your baby. And so that's kind of how it's conceptualized. But if you don't feel well and you don't meet criteria for depression and you're more worried than sad, that might look a little more like postpartum anxiety. So this is also known within that community. The American Pregnancy Association, you know, says that postpartum anxiety affects about 10% of new moms. And then something called the Postpartum Support International Group has reported that 25 to 35% of these moms experience anxiety during pregnancy. So it happens before giving birth as well. But in some cases, the anxiety and the depression go hand in hand. But what happens if your anxious thoughts are intrusive and they're extremely distressing and they interfere with your ability to function? What if your worry goes beyond the general anxieties associated with being a new mom and making sure that your baby is safe? You know, some of these irrational thoughts can become obsessive and they can impact your ability to connect with your child because they can cause you to avoid doing anything that could compromise harming your child. And so if these symptoms look like checking your baby to make sure they're alive, unable to feed your baby because you're worried that their bottle's contaminated, if these scary unwanted thoughts persist, then we look at that like postpartum OCD rather than just simple postpartum anxiety. So that's sort of how we see the difference. Postpartum depression, I guess in a nutshell, is sadness, inability, not interested in caring or bonding with your child. The postpartum anxiety, it's a spectrum. It's kind of on the lesser end of that spectrum. And then the postpartum OCD is these persistent, unwanted, intrusive thoughts that completely impair your ability to function. You're unable to sleep. You're unable to leave your house. You're unable to be alone with your child. Yeah. So there's a lot of conversation around specific OCD subtypes in the OCD community, but there's not as much talk about postpartum OCD. And then the fears usually involve contamination, whether it's germs, toxicity, certain illnesses, and the obsessions can involve, harm-related fears, sometimes sexually related fears. And then the compulsions can look like avoidance or cleaning or checking or aligning things in a certain way to feel right.
Yeah. No, that's great. Thank you. And how often, I guess, in your practice do you come across this?
Yeah, so after reading the literature, I was truly surprised at how few patients actually come through my door with these symptoms. Since it looks like it's so prevalent in that community, in the pregnant postpartum community, I've only treated maybe a handful of women who are coming into my office with specific postpartum OCD, and of those women, the majority of them had the diagnosis of OCD before. So I think they were a little bit more aware and more, kind of accepting, hey, this is what's happening. It's jumped from, me worrying about contaminating my colleagues, and now it's jumped to worrying about contaminating my child. So they have more awareness about their symptoms. But a lot of women don't actually seek help because they're afraid that their baby might get taken away from them or they might be arrested, because some of these thoughts are so scary to them.
Yeah, that's a really valid point. Yeah, and I know Catherine, as we discussed before, Catherine came on the show, UK advocate, and shared her story with postpartum OCD, and she had OCD. I don't think she had a diagnosis before this, but she, looking back, she was fully aware that OCD was kind of in her childhood and stuff. But yeah, she navigates and talks about working with social workers and stuff around the time of being pregnant. Nothing to do with OCD, but then some of the trickier situations that came up when she was sharing some of her thoughts, and she actually wrote a piece for the Journal of Midwifery, midwives in the UK, to kind of raise awareness among midwives of if someone shares these types of thoughts, it potentially is OCD, and this is how you can handle it and help get them help. Yeah, okay, so I can understand why some women and dads, men don't want
Yeah,
to come forward.
absolutely, it affects the fathers as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot, that's why I sort of wanted to give background. Postpartum depression is so much more spoken about. And then, now that there's talk about postpartum anxiety, but there's really no talk about these obsessive compulsive, intrusive, unwanted thoughts that happen to a new mom. So there's a lot of shame and fear associated with sharing those thoughts. And so I'm so happy that Catherine was able to speak to these providers because it's the questions we need to ask that, will create the conversation so that the patient feels more willing to open up and share.
Absolutely. Yeah, couldn't agree more. Okay, so treatment for this type of or this theme of OCD, how does it differ, if it differs?
It doesn't really. I've successfully used exposure and response prevention for these cases. If OCD kind of jumps around in that way, when it picks a new theme, it kind of tricks the person into believing this is real, this is different, this is something to pay attention to. And so, a new mom is going to be exhausted and stressed and have normal worries, of hypervigilance to make sure that her baby is meeting a schedule, and so, her defenses are going to be lowered. And so it's really important to remind that person that it's another trick that, OCD kind of found its way in, and now it's going to scare you into believing that if you leave the house before the baby is 6 months, it's gonna get a terrible genetic or disease that's gonna kill the baby. Or if you drop the pacifier on the floor and you kind of wipe it off or shake it off or not, don't even do anything, then the baby's gonna get sick. Or, if you bathe the baby and you wash the baby, there's this obsessive worry that somebody might walk in and think that you're doing something inappropriate. And so it's just important to teach these women that it's just another theme. and teach the fathers. It's just another theme that, you know, research tells us that every single new mom experiences some intrusive, unwanted thoughts about the baby. So we know it's normal. And so having that understanding, it's just important to conceptualize it that way and treat it that way, that this is just another OCD theme. And, you know, we're going to tolerate the uncertainty and get closer to the distress and lean into not knowing what may happen. But, you know, respond differently by not avoiding and getting closer. And it's amazing. I mean, these women are compromising their relationship to their new baby. That's the saddest part for me is, you know, these women come in feeling hopeless, you know, like they can't be alone with their child. In some cases, they have somebody come in with them. They're unable to bathe their babies. They're unable to look at their babies when they feed them. They're unable to be alone with their children. And so it compromises the bonding experience and they're devastated. So there's, you know, some grief involved in that. But when you start working with them and their children and you see this connection, it's magic. It's beautiful. They're laughing with their child and they're letting their kid pick things up off the floor and they're, you know, singing songs with the kids in the bathtub. And it really changes the connection that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. And are there any accommodations you make for this form of OCD when doing ERP? In terms of like, because kind of you just said it, do you allow them to bring their child, their baby in the room? And
oh, they have to.
Okay.
Whatever triggers them, that's what I encourage them to bring into the room. And in most cases, the baby triggers them. Yeah. Or, you know, some cases being alone with the baby. So some exposures would be them breastfeeding while I leave the office. I had a patient who like was convinced every time she saw me that I was going to call child services. So that became the exposure is maybe today's the day, you know, maybe today's the day. And she would say, maybe today's the day. And then she'd go home and I'd see her next week. So some women get worried that, you know, they're alone with their children and they're bathing their child and they might, you know, molest their child or somebody might assume they're doing something inappropriately. And so some exposures are, I had a patient put up a sign that says like, police welcome, you know, please knock, child sleeping.
Yeah.
So those are good.
Yeah. Okay, cool. No, I like that. And the next kind of question was, how do you support the parent throughout the treatment? And that's quite a generic question. But I think when I wrote it, I was thinking about, because kind of like in relationship OCD, the thing the person worries about is another person. It's not, is this door contaminated? It's not, did I accidentally run someone over? Or this person is actually real. The things you may be worrying about them most likely isn't, but there is actually a physical person in front of you. And in the case of a mum or dad, there is a physical child. So I think it was more around supporting them to support their child. Long-winded answer question even, but...
Sure. And so the question is, how do I support the parent in supporting the child?
Yeah, because obviously nurturing the child is so important for their development and their growth to be a happy, healthy human being. I guess supporting them so they can continue to do their best while they're in recovery.
Right,
to do
that's
their
a
best
good question.
For the child.
Yeah, and so some of those exposures, you know, curate that opportunity to develop healthy attachment styles with mom and child. You know, so if the mom is avoiding the child to protect them from harm, then they're unable to nurture their baby. And so, you know, so we prevent the response of avoidance by creating these exercises that promote that connection. These babies are so happy when they see their moms working hard. It's the sweetest thing. They laugh, they smile. It's like they have this like innate understanding that their mom is working really hard. And I don't know, maybe it's in my mind, but it feels like they're proud. You know, they're just like rooting their parents on. These little ones, they're good for the exposures because, you know, a partner can offer you accommodation. They can offer you reassurance. But, you know, a 9-month-old baby isn't able to offer you any reassurance. They can just look at you and smile. And so, you know, those exposures create that connection. So I have moms hold their baby and breastfeed and, you know, have these like exposure statements, like, you know, mommy might hurt you one day. You know, mommy might not be able to protect you. And, you know, whatever the statement is that is causing distress, you know, they'll create eye contact and they'll have this bonding activity while leaning into the exposure. Or, you know, if they're hugging the baby or they're afraid, let's see, I have a patient who's afraid of kissing her baby on the mouth because she thinks it's germy. There's also maybe some like sexually intrusive thoughts associated with that behavior. So, you know, we play games. We let the kids stand on mom's legs and the kid sort of wobbles around and sometimes they land on mom's face and mom just stands there and she tolerates it and she lets it happen. Or exposures related to changing the diaper. You know, that's also a good opportunity for moms to connect with their kids and also lean into the exposure because, you know, you have to wipe your kiddo, make sure that, you know, the poop and the pee is taken care of. And so there's, you know, they're wiping the genitals and they're looking and they're making sure it's all clean. And so there's a lot of really good exposures there too. But there's also a really good opportunity to connect. So I think they go, you know, side by side when you're able to really fully embrace the exposure exercises that involve your child. You know, you're inevitably going to connect with them.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. No, thank you for those examples. And do you ever bring in if there is a spouse or partner in this person's life, do you ever bring them into a session or do you do a session with them independently on how they can help and support them?
Great question. I always encourage the partner to come in really whatever case, whoever's at home with the person suffering, I always encourage them to come into the office because learning about OCD and accommodation, ways to help your partner fight the OCD, that's going to be the most effective way for the person to reach recovery. You know, they're in my office 1 or 2 hours a week. They're doing most of their work at home with their family. So if their family is equipped, then, you know, their chance of success is much higher. So in most cases I do have the partner come in at least once. In some cases it really is just the work that I do with the child. If they're the stressor, then I'll just have the kiddo come in.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And then do you ever encourage anything like support groups for any theme, but I guess it might be hard to find a specific postpartum OCD support group, but just generic OCD support groups, still encourage that for them?
Definitely. A specific, you know, postpartum OCD support group would be great. I've been thinking about that. They don't exist where in Denver, Colorado yet. So I wouldn't be able to recommend that.
No.
There are a lot of other resources. There are websites like the Postpartum International website or Postpartum Stress Center. There's a lot. Yeah.
As I said, there's maternal OCD. I think it's .org. Double check in. Yeah, maternalocd.org. It's a UK-based charity, but it's pretty good for this type of stuff.
Yeah, Postpartum International is .net. Okay. Yeah. They're located in the US, but they're international, so I'm not really sure what their presence is in the UK. I'm hoping it's good.
Yeah.
So there are other resources. There are books, Dropping the Baby and Other Scary Thoughts. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's good. And then there's another book called Just Buy Her a Dress and She'll Be Fine, which is the story of a woman. It's just her personal experience with postpartum OCD.
Okay.
So yeah, I would recommend a support group. I wish there was a specific one, but we have a support group that meets the first and third Tuesday of the month. It's just general OCD for adults. But we do have women who are experiencing postpartum OCD attend the group as well. And they found the group very helpful. Because like I said before, you know, it's, you know, OCD is OCD. The themes are going to jump around. But the general concept about how to address and treat these themes, these symptoms are, you know, kind of across the board. They're pretty much the same. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. And a few more questions before we move on to those. Is there anything else on this particular theme that you wanted to share?
Yeah, I think if there was... there was like a motivational statement I could make to those who are experiencing OCD or postpartum OCD would be, you know, would be to receive treatment in order to learn how to help kind of model more adaptive and effective ways of tolerating distress for your kiddos. You know, there's really strong evidence to suggest OCD is genetic, but we know environmental variables play a really big role in the severity of symptoms. So if you're avoiding certain things and your kid is watching you, then it's likely they'll think those things are scary and they'll find themselves avoiding them too. And we want to teach those kiddos that, you know, there might not be something to be afraid of. And so we really have to learn from those opportunities instead of avoid them. And so it's really important for parents to be that model so that the kids see them as heroes and realize if mommy or daddy could do it, I could too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And also, yeah, what came to me as well was just modeling that even if you are scared of something, deciding to do that thing anyway is a good example of, you know, sometimes fear isn't always... you don't always have to listen to it. Sometimes you can still pursue your goals or whatever it is in spite of said fear.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Unless it's an actual tiger in front of you, then don't follow your fear.
Right.
It's to run.
Absolutely. If it's an imminent threat to your life or to someone else, then respond accordingly. But sometimes, you know, our brain sends us these false alarms. And so we have to teach it, whether it's an appropriate message or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool. So I've asked you this before, I believe. I'll ask it again, which is advice for your 20-year-old self.
I wish I knew. I would have had time to prepare advice for my 20-year-old self. I can't recall what I said last time. I'm worried I'm just going to repeat it, but I'll just say what comes to mind. Don't take life so seriously. You make up the rules you follow. I mean, other than the law.
Yeah.
But, you know, whenever you tell yourself you can't, it's just, you know, it's a rule you set for yourself. You get in your own way.
Yeah.
So life can be whatever you allow it to be. You have more control than you believe.
Yeah, like it. And you've got a billboard in Denver. What do you want written on that billboard?
You're not the only one who thinks about crashing their car. It's on a highway.
It could be a billboard
on a highway.
If you want it to be.
If it's on a highway, that's what I would put. Like, you're not the only one who thinks about crashing their car.
Cool, I like it. And is there anything else that you wish you could have shared today?
Just that, you know, the more we talk about these really scary thoughts and the more we share our stories, then the less stigmas attached to it, the more normalized they become. And that's really the name of the game. We have to, you know, we have to face our fears. And in some cases, that's sharing our story.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure.
So there you have it. Thanks to Karina for her time, and thank you to you guys for listening. Quick disclaimer, this podcast is not therapy. It's not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Until we speak, take care.